Well, back by popular demand, Dr. Jerry Tennant joins us. Healing is Voltage. We're going to tell you all about that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Jerry Tennant was accepted in the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School. That was in 1960, age of 19. That's unheard of. It graduated in the top 10 of his class in 64 with an MD degree. He taught surgeons around the world to do outpatient eye surgery. He was instrumental in getting Congress to pay for outpatient surgery. That saved Medicare millions of dollars every year. And he also was one of the first surgeons in the country to place intraocular lenses in eyes after cataract surgery, eliminating the need for thick, incapacitating glasses after cataract surgery. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Jerry, how are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Good to have you back. Well, you were so popular when you were on with me last year that we thought it's time to bring you back, so I'm glad you're here. What's new with you?
Well, I had hoped tonight we could talk about healing eye diseases because that's such an important issue, particularly with the aging of the population. And now that we've figured out how to correct some of those problems, I thought that might be a fun thing to talk about tonight.
You know, also, and let me ask you, why do some people have to have cataracts replaced and others don't? What causes that?
Well, a cataract means that the natural lens in your eye becomes gradually more and more opaque and eventually has to be removed and replaced with a plastic lens so you can see. And the aging process is simply a matter of whether or not the body has the ability to make new cells that work, and that's one of the things I want to discuss at some length with you as we get started with our conversation here.
All right. And, of course, when you were on with me back in July of 2010, Jerry, we talked about your work, Healing is Voltage, got a tremendous response into some of the things that you have been doing. Over the course of a year, has anything changed in that direction? Are you more accepting of this as you ever were before?
Absolutely. We've learned a few new pieces of the puzzle, but it still is true that the basic issue about whether you're sick or whether you're well is the voltage in the cells. Sort of like your car, you know, you can have a brand new Mercedes, but if it doesn't have a battery in it, it's not going anywhere. And so it is with you.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Now, Jerry, let's go back a little bit beyond the bio. Tell everybody about your background.
I appreciate that. One of the things I'd like to just make a statement as we begin here is to recognize what's going on in this country as far as physicians' ability to discuss issues. And this is exemplified by a letter that was sent from both the FDA and the FTC to Dr. Andrew Weil in October of 2009. Most people know Andy Weil. He's the guy with the big bushy gray beard who has written extensively about integrative medicine, and he's the professor of integrative medicine at the medical school in Arizona. And he put on his website that the medical literature shows that if you take the herb astragalus, it cuts the duration of colds and flu in half, and recommended that with the upcoming winter season that people keep some of that on hand. So I get this letter from the FDA saying that under the Patriot Act, that they are saying that he is not allowed to say that, and if he doesn't take it off of his website, they'll come arrest him and confiscate everything in his office.
Under the Patriot Act.
Yeah, because he was interfering with the sale of vaccines.
Ah, that's exactly right. Plus, he was helping people boost their immune system, and they don't want to hear that, Jerry, do they?
That's right. And so the problem that this exemplifies is that now even medical school professors are not allowed to discuss things in our medical literature without fear of being punished for it. So for that reason, I want to make it clear that my conversation tonight is that I'm talking under the auspices of two other licenses I have. I have an MD license in Texas, but I also have a license in Arizona with the Board of Integrative and Homeopathic Medicine, and I also have a license under the Pastoral Medical Association. And speaking then with those religious credentials, it gives me some protection, gives me some ability to speak, because the Supreme Court in Texas has, in the case called Westbrook versus Penley, said that if a person has, if a doctor has both a religious degree and a secular degree in medicine, that the religious degree takes precedence. And therefore, I wanted to just make it clear that anything I speak about tonight, I'm speaking under that protection as well as the First Amendment protection, which allows me to say things that I can't say with just my MD degree. So with that as a preface, I'd like to say that, you know, I'm trained, I was trained primarily as an ophthalmologist and practiced ophthalmology and did eye surgery for about 30 years here in the Dallas area, and I was fortunate enough to develop a lot of the techniques that advanced ophthalmology and changed the way that we did it for the better. One of the things I did was to do the research for the laser for the company called Visex that's used in LASIK surgery. I did about 90% of the research that allowed it to be FDA approved. And I had a lot of fun doing that, but in the process of doing it, I inhaled viruses and got encephalitis and a bleeding disorder. And so I ended up where I could see a patient and know what was wrong with it, but I couldn't remember how to write a prescription.
It was that bad, Jerry?
Yep. And also I got spastic movements, which doesn't work really well if you're operating inside somebody's eyeball.
No, not at all.
And so for all of those reasons, I had to quit work at the end of November of 1995. And I slept about 16 hours a day and had about 3 hours a day in which I could think clearly enough to understand a newspaper, and then like a light switch would go off and I couldn't understand it anymore. So, of course, I went to all over the place to the best doctors I could find, and they said, well, you have three viruses in your brain and we don't know what to do about it, so don't call us, we'll call you. And good luck. So during those 3 hours or so a day that I could think, I realized I had to figure out how to get myself well. And my first thought was, well, if I can figure out how to make one cell work, I can make them all work. And so I started the process of reading cellular biology books, which I hadn't done for about 30 years. And as I began to read through those books, I noticed that in almost every book, there would be anywhere from a sentence to a page about the fact that cells are designed to run in a very narrow range of pH. Well, I didn't remember a whole lot about pH, except it had something to do with acid-base balance. So I began to study that and came to realize that pH is just really a measurement of voltage in liquids.
And critical to the body, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like everything else. When I read cells have to run between a pH of 7.35 and 7.45, that made a lot of sense. Because if you look how pH is designed, you have to think about the difference between a copper wire and a glass of water. A copper wire that brings voltage into my room here, the switch is either on or off. So if it's on, there are electrons coming into the room and the lights work. Switch is off, then they're none, and so the light doesn't work. But in a liquid, you've got a different situation. A liquid can either be an electron donor or an electron stealer. And so you take a sophisticated voltmeter and put it into the water, and you measure, and if it's an electron stealer, then you put a plus sign in front of the voltage, and if it's an electron donor, you put a minus sign in front of the voltage. So a plus 400 millivolts is the same thing as a pH of zero, and minus 400 millivolts of electron donor is the same thing as a voltage of, or as a pH of 14. So minus 400 millivolts is a pH of 14. So this 0 to 14 scale that we call pH is just a logarithmic scale of the voltage. So it's really much easier to think about things than just thinking about voltage. So if you look at 7.35, that's the same thing as minus 20 millivolts, and 7.45 is a minus 25 millivolts. So basically, what all the cellular biology books tell you is that cells have to run between minus 20 and minus 25 millivolts. Once I understood that, I had a really big aha moment, because I realized that that must be my problem. I might just mention that, because some people ask me this, you can have a voltage potential across a cell membrane that gets as high as minus 90 millivolts, but the environment, the running voltage of the cell is minus 20 to minus 25.
And this would be for everybody, right, Jerry?
Everybody. Everybody's cells run that. The only variation is that kids tend to run a little bit higher. Some kids will run at minus 35 instead of minus 25, and some really good-shaped athletes also run at minus 35. But most of us run it at minus 25 if we have a healthy cell. Well, then the other interesting thing is, to make a new cell, you need minus 50 millivolts. So think about my thumb for a moment. As I sit here, my thumb's running at minus 25 millivolts, and I'm a happy camper. Then I hit that thumb with a hammer, and I damage and smash a bunch of cells in there. Well, the thumb will immediately go to minus 50 millivolts, because it takes minus 50 to make new cells to replace those I smashed with a hammer. Well, at minus 50 millivolts, there are some interesting things that automatically happen. One of the things is that the capillaries, the arterial capillaries, dilate. And the reason they do that at minus 50 millivolts is to dump new raw materials at the curb so that you have the materials you need to make new cells. Well, when those vessels dilate to give you the new raw materials, then your thumb is swollen, it's red, it's warm, it has a pulsing pain, and it makes you say bad words. So the process of healing then has to do with this thing that we know as inflammation. So you get busy with minus 50 millivolts and all the raw materials, and you start making new cells. And when you finish making all of those you smashed with a hammer, your thumb goes back to minus 25 and everything's as it should be.
How long does it take to make new cells?
Well, that's an interesting thing. It varies from one type of cell to another. For example, the rods and cones in your retina are replaced every 48 hours. The skin you're sitting in this moment is only 6 weeks old. Your liver's 8 weeks old. Your nervous system 8 months old, et cetera.
They regenerate that fast?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Therein lies the secret to understanding chronic disease. But let me just tell you about another scenario with my thumb. Let's assume when I smashed it with a hammer, I don't have enough voltage in me to get up to minus 50 millivolts. So what that means is, if I can't get up to minus 50 millivolts, I can't make new cells. If I can't make new cells, I can't repair the damage I did with a hammer.
So your body won't make new cells automatically?
No, well, it can't if it doesn't have the juice. If it doesn't have minus 50 millivolts, it can't make the new cells.
Okay, and why would you not have the juice?
Well, people's bodies can run out of voltage, and there are several reasons for that. The most common one is being hypothyroid. But there are other reasons as well, but that's certainly the most common one. So whenever you see somebody with low total body voltage, they're hypothyroid until proven otherwise. And one of the problems with being hypothyroid is that when you consume fluoride, as we almost all do, fluoride displaces its cousin iodine, and so you make a fake thyroid hormone with fluoride that shows up in your blood test but doesn't work. So you go see your doc, and they do blood tests, and they come back and say, well, your thyroid's working just fine.
But it's because of the fluoride in your system.
It's making a fake hormone.
Huh.
And the other problem is that the 80% of the thyroid hormone that's made by the thyroid gland is what's called T4, but the active form is T3. So the body has to convert from T4 to T3. And that conversion requires iodine, selenium, zinc, iron, cortisol, progesterone, and glutathione. And if you're missing one of those guys, you can't convert to T3. Instead, you make another fake hormone called reverse T3. And that's another problem, even in people who are diagnosed with hypothyroidism, is that the most common thing to do that doctors do is to put them on a pill that has nothing but T4 in it. And if they're missing, let's say they're zinc depleted or iodine depleted, which 80 to 90% of the population are, then they make a fake hormone, and so the thyroid hormone replacement doesn't work. So that's the most common reason that people end up with low voltage and chronic disease.
Constantly. And generally, Jerry, somebody, if you took a pH test of someone, would they generally be too acidic?
Yes.
Most people.
Yeah. The word acidic simply means low voltage.
Exactly.
The word alkaline means high voltage or availability of electrons.
And doesn't cancer thrive in a low voltage environment?
Cancer occurs at plus 30 millivolts. And remember, plus is electron stealer. So as voltage begins to drop from the normal minus 25, when you're down around minus 15, you're tired, minus 10, you're sick. And as voltage keeps dropping, several bad things happen to you. One of the bad things that happens is that oxygen levels drop. So if I take a glass of water here and stick a tube in it and start bubbling oxygen into that water, the amount of oxygen that will dissolve in the water is dictated by the voltage of the water. So if I raise the voltage, more oxygen goes into solution. But if I lower the voltage, the oxygen actually comes out of the water and disappears. Well, our cells are 70% water, so as
Same
the voltage
thing.
Drops, the oxygen goes away. Well, as oxygen goes away, there are several other bad things that happen. One of them has to do with your metabolism and your energy production system. Inside cells, we have a rechargeable battery system that provides energy for the enzymes inside the cell to work. And that battery system is called ADP and ATP. A charged up battery is called ATP, and a discharged battery is called ADP. And so we have a battery recharger inside the cell called the Krebs cycle. So for every unit of fat you put into the Krebs cycle, if oxygen is available, you get 38 recharged ATP-T batteries. But if oxygen's not available, for every unit of fat you put through that recharger, you only get 2 ATPs. So it's like having a car that goes from 38 miles a gallon to 2 miles a gallon. And of course, that helps explain why people get tired as their voltage drops. Then another bad thing that happens is that each of us contains about a trillion bugs, and those bugs are asleep as long as oxygen's around. But as soon as the oxygen goes away, the bugs wake up. And the first thing the bugs want to do when they wake up is have lunch. They want to have you for lunch.
Yeah.
And so since bugs don't have teeth, they can't take a bite out of your cells. And so they put out digestive enzymes to dissolve your cells so they can get the nutrients out. Well, those enzymes that are dissolving your cells don't just stay right where the bugs are. They get in your bloodstream and go all over the place and dissolve cells all over and cause damage here and there and everywhere. So think about a strep bacteria having a picnic on your tonsil. They're having a lot of fun, but you perceive it as a really sore throat. And
that's right.
Enzymes get into your bloodstream, and then you get a fever and throw up and feel terrible. But one of the serious things that happens is that those digestive enzymes can go down and scar your heart valves, or they can go down and scar your knees. And so you get these diseases elsewhere in the body when you have some bugs that are hiding out somewhere else.
All right, hold on for a second, Jerry. We're going to hit the break in just a moment. Our guest tonight, Dr. Jerry Tennant, Healing is Voltage. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we're going to have some open lines and continue following the breaking story of the power outage on the West Coast. Millions of people without power right now. If you're lucky enough to have one of Sea Crane's portable radios and you can hear this program, and call in with us next hour as we continue to chat about this disaster. We'll come back in a moment. We'll take some calls, continue chatting with Dr. Jerry Tennant. Healing is Voltage. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Back with Dr. Jerry Tennant. Healing is Voltage. Let's go to the phones as well. Gary in Toledo, Ohio, you're up with us. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, good evening. I have a real quick question. I have a medical oddity. I'm losing a lot of my senses. Sight, hearing, smell, and taste specifically. I've been to the major medical centers in the Midwest, and different opinions. Primarily, I'm being told that I have a mitochondrial genetic mutation. And it's a real puzzle, very rare, they're telling me. And since you're an ophthalmologist, I've lost complete vision in my left eye, and I'm seeing 2600 in my right eye. I am trying to think of anything you might suggest that could basically help me to regain vision if possible, and likewise hold on to my senses if that's at all possible.
Have you heard anything like this, Jerry?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Oh, thank God.
First of all, if we just talk about the mitochondrial disease, that's sort of what I was talking about a minute ago with the ATP situation, the ability to recharge to give you the voltage so that the mitochondria can work. And one of the more common things that damages that is heavy metals like mercury. So one would want to know, you know, if you have a heavy metal load. But this applies to the eyes, the nervous system, and all the rest of the body. The thing you have to, the shift in thinking you have to think about is this. All chronic disease is caused by the inability to make new cells that work. So let me just say that one more time. All chronic disease is caused by the inability of the body to make new cells that work. So when you have a chronic disease, whether it's disease of your liver, disease of your nervous system, as you have, you ask the question, why am I not able to make new cells? Well, making new cells, you need the voltage, which we've already talked a little bit about, but then you need to have the raw materials. And basically, cells are primarily made up of gears inside made of amino acids or proteins, and the cell membranes are made from fats. So then you have to ask the question, okay, why do I not have those available so that I can make the cells? So let's just take a look at the proteins for just one moment. The human is designed to never, ever absorb proteins. I'll say that once more. The human is designed to never, ever absorb proteins, and the reason is the way things are supposed to work is when you eat a protein, stomach acid breaks that into amino acids, and then you use those amino acids to make your own proteins. There are several reasons that's important. Behind your breastbone, you have a gland called a thymus gland, and that thymus gland contains the database of all the proteins that are you. So when the white cells are made, they go through the thymus, and that database is downloaded into the white cells, and the white cells go zooming around your body, and they bump into a protein, and they compare it against the database. And if that's a protein you made, then that white blood cell says, oh, you're me, have a nice day. And it goes on and looks for another one. And it finds another protein, and it says, whoops, you're not in my database, you're here to hurt me. You must be a virus or a bacteria, and so it calls in the immune troops. The immune troops make antibodies and attack that protein, try to destroy it, and if it can't destroy it, it stores it in fat cells. So the problem then is if you don't have enough stomach acid to break proteins down into amino acids, then every time you eat, you absorb one of those proteins, and that whole protein is looked at as your body by a foreigner, an invader, and therefore you end up attacking everything you just eat. Well, when you have all of that immune system reaction going on, then that causes all sorts of grief. So it's very important to have stomach acid. And what does it take to make stomach acid? It takes vitamin B1, iodine, zinc, and salt. And so if you're missing any one of those things and can't make stomach acid, or if you're taking pills to shut down your stomach acid, you're going to end up having all sorts of problems. Another problem is that without stomach acid, you can't absorb zinc, and without zinc, you can't make neurochemicals like dopamine and serotonin, so your brain doesn't work the way it's supposed to. So just fixing stomach acid goes a long way towards solving lots of problems and all sorts of chronic disease, including the one you have. And another one has to do with fats. To absorb fats, you have to have bile. If you don't have bile, you can't absorb fats. So where's the bile come from? Well, the liver makes a quart and a half of bile every day, so it needs a storage tank, namely the gallbladder. and it can't make bile fast enough to service a fatty meal. So if you don't have a liver that works to make bile, or if you don't have a gallbladder that can store it, then you become fat deficient, and therefore you don't have the raw materials to make the cell membranes. And, you, of course, the nervous system itself is 50% cholesterol by weight. So if you're on anti-cholesterol drugs, or you don't have a gallbladder, or you don't have a gallbladder that works, or you don't have a liver that works, you can't make, you don't have fats to make new nerve cells, so you can't get well. So just looking at how that whole system works and what kind of fats you're eating makes a lot of difference of how you can get well. And, you know, let me just tell you, for example, in my field of ophthalmology, we have, you know, one of the major causes of blindness is macular degeneration. And basically, we're taught as ophthalmologists that that's a progressive disease that may be slowed down a little bit with vitamins, but that's about all we know how to do for it. Well, I can now predictably reverse macular degeneration. And you simply do it by focusing on, do you have the voltage and the raw materials it takes to make new cells in the macula? So we have people come in that have poor vision on Monday, and by Friday, their vision is dramatically better. So if we can get somebody who's 20/70 or better, we almost always get them back to 20/20 or 20/25 by Friday.
How many doctors are trying this, Jerry?
None, just me. I just figured this out. But it's working amazingly well. The same thing is true with glaucoma, which you apparently don't have, but may very well get since you have all of this stuff going on in your nervous system. But if we have the time, I can tell you how we can now predictably reverse glaucoma.
Well, let's come back to that in a sec. Let's take a few more calls here.
All right.
As the clock is ticking, Fort Collins, Colorado. Jeannie, it's your turn. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Hi, it's so nice to talk to you both tonight. Doctor, I have MS, and it's interesting that you talked about gallbladder, which I had that removed, and macular degeneration is so prevalent in my family. So I'm like, wait, I have three strikes, you're out. But what I wanted to ask you was, I was told about a machine. I wish I could remember the name of it, but it's a voltage machine, and there's straps that you strap around your wrists, and then you do this voltage thing for like 15 minutes a day, and it's supposed to help with this. Is that anything you're familiar with?
Yeah, there are a lot of different devices like that that are intended to try to adjust either the voltage or frequencies in body, but the thing about MS and all other so-called autoimmune diseases is that what I'm finding is that all autoimmune diseases are caused by cell wall deficient organisms called L forms.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about these L forms is that you can't culture them in a normal petri dish, and you cannot see them with a standard microscope. You have to use either a phase contrast or dark field microscope. And you look at a drop of blood, and you can see these bugs swarming around in there, and that's what's causing the problem. So in all autoimmune diseases, what you'll find is that there's a hidden infection someplace. So I was talking earlier about how when you have strep throat, the strep can put out a digestive enzyme that goes down and scars your heart valves. Well, when you have MS or any other autoimmune disease, you've got bugs hiding someplace that are going up and damaging your nerve cells. And the most common place for bugs to hide in MS is actually in your teeth. So most people that have MS will have either a root canal, which is they're always infected, or a crown or a filling that has infection under it. And that infection drops the voltage enough with the poisons called gliotoxins that allow these cell wall deficient L forms to go damage your nervous system. So the way you fix autoimmune diseases is you go find the hidden infection, which is easily identified by measuring where the voltage is low, get rid of the infection, and the autoimmune disease goes away.
All right, let's go to Bronx. Gerald, you're up with us in New York. Hi, Gerald.
Yes. Hi, how are you, George? Dr.
Good.
Tennant, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I have a condition called RP, retinitis pigmentosa. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Now, could this be a voltage problem in the sense that the retina is inflamed with retinitis pigmentosa?
Well, again, all chronic disease is caused by your inability to make new cells. And so the question is either the inability to make them or you've got some toxin that's damaged them after they get made. And so, and the same is when you have something that's believed to be genetic, then it means that the genes have been modified by some toxins or by deficiencies. There's an interesting bit of work done by Waterland and his group that shows that our genes actually change if we have nutritional deficiencies. And so, you know, the approach for all chronic diseases is to look at why don't you have the ability to make a cell? Is it the voltage? Is it the proteins? Is it the fats? Is it the vitamins and minerals, et cetera? And then, you know, one of the things, unfortunately, we don't have time to talk about is this amazing stuff called fulvic acid, which has the ability, it's the way the universe works, to control heavy metals, radiation, all sorts of problems.
You said folic acid?
No, F-U-L-V-I-C, fulvic.
Ah.
And so the way the universe works is that you have, normally, fulvic acid is present in our plants. We eat it and we have it in our system, and it cleans up all the heavy metals, cleans up the radiation, cleans up allows cell membranes to open and let nutrition in, does all sorts of things. We could spend the hour talking about just how that stuff works, but that's one of the keys that we use in fixing all these kinds of chronic diseases is to get the body back to the way it was designed to work in the first place. And so if you fix the fulvic levels, you fix the nitric oxide levels, you fix the fats, you fix the proteins and the vitamins and minerals, then you have all the raw materials and the voltage you need. You can go make new cells, and that's how we're able to reverse chronic diseases that have previously been thought to be irreversible or we don't know what causes them.
All right, next up, let's go to Van Nuys, California. It's Audrey, first-time caller. Hi, Audrey.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to ask the guest, I thought about a couple more things to ask. One of them just kind of came to mind when you said something about the crowns and the root canals affecting, the virus of some sort.
Yeah, most of the hidden infections are in teeth.
Oh, that's most dentists will tell you to take an antibiotic, Jerry, won't they?
Yeah, but the antibiotics won't affect L forms. They actually make them worse.
Oh, they do. All right. Let's go to Stephen in Thousand Oaks, California. Hey, Stephen, on the Skype line. Go ahead. Stephen? Well, he's not on the Skype line anymore, but Karen is there in Colorado. Go ahead, Karen.
Good evening, gentlemen. Doctor, I'd like to ask a question, Mason, about the effects of high voltage on the human body.
The effects of high voltage?
Yes, sir. Back in 81, I came in contact with 17,000 volts.
That's not a good thing.
No, it wasn't. It took me about a year to learn how to speak again. But I was wondering about any other aspects of the voltage and what might do, what long-term effects it may have.
Well, since you survived it and it's been this long, then the likelihood is that most of your systems are back to running the way they're supposed to. You know, if you think about other things, if I have a power surge in here in my house and don't have surge protectors, it can burn out my computer or my stereo or whatever. And then I have to get a new circuit board or a new device. And with cells, when you have excess voltage like that, it will kill some of the cells. But if it doesn't kill you, then, you know, you have the ability to make new ones and replace it. So generally, once you make the new ones and replace them, you're fine. One of the interesting things about people who've been struck with really high voltage, such as lightning, is that there has never been a recorded case of cancer being struck by lightning where it didn't cure the cancer. Isn't that fun?
That's interesting. Huh. How many people that get hit by lightning actually die? Most of them?
Most of them.
Yeah.
But those that have cancer and live, the cancer's gone.
Gone.
I think that's an interesting statistic.
What does that tell you? Is science doing anything with this, Jerry?
Not much. This is off the radar because almost all of the research in science is funded by pharmaceutical companies, and they don't want to look at voltage. They want to look at new pills.
Well, and as you know, the body is electric. There's no doubt about that. Let's go to Carol in Rolette, Texas. We'll squeeze you in here. Carol, go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, doctor.
Hi.
I'm actually hypothyroid, and I take 150 micrograms of level thyroxine. Last week, they diagnosed me with acute pancreatitis. I thought I was having a heart attack. They kept me in the hospital for a couple of days, sent me home, and I'm still having the problem. So what should I do?
Well, pancreatitis generally is a result of not having enough stomach acid. Here's how that works. When you put anything at all in your stomach, the stomach's going to attempt to go to a pH of 2. Of course, that's very acidic, and it accomplishes that by secreting hydrochloric acid into the stomach. And for every molecule of hydrochloric acid that goes into the stomach, it simultaneously creates a molecule of bicarbonate, which goes into the blood and into the surrounding tissue. Then when the food passes into the small intestine, it has to go to a pH of 8. And to get up there, the pancreas makes baking soda or bicarbonate to inject into the small intestine. And simultaneously, hydrochloric acid is injected into the pancreas. Well, while the food was in the stomach, if you put bicarbonate into the tissue and into the blood, then that bicarbonate is sitting there. And so when the hydrochloric acid comes in, it's neutralized and everything's fine. But if you didn't have the ability to make the stomach acid because either you're taking Prilosec or one of those kinds of pills, or your iodine or zinc or vitamin B1 depleted, then you never put that original bicarbonate in your pancreas. So when it injects the hydrochloric acid in it, of course, that irritates it. Now you've got pancreatitis.
All right, Jerry, thank you so much. Dr. Jerry Tennant, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's tennantinstitute.com. When I come back, we're going to talk about this incredible power outage that hit California, Arizona, Mexico, leaving at one point up to 4 million people without power. We'll talk about that next with you on Coast to Coast AM.